Good afternoon, and welcome to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Osterhout, and today is Thursday, May 28th. We have a great show lined up for you today. We'll talk with incoming Chancellor Rick Caulfield. We'll talk with Karen Fortwängler to highlight Kids Safe Day at the Eagles Lodge. We'll learn about Saturday's Cancer Connection Celebration of Life, and we'll hear all that's happening in arts around town with every Thursday's edition of Arts Up. Writer's Almanac, music, and more here on a Juno Afternoon. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Arizona's congressional delegation is asking the FBI and the U.S. Department of Justice to help them stop the sale of Hopi objects at a Paris auction house next month. As Carrie Young reports, the effort is among several avenues officials are exploring to repatriate the items.
The written request was signed by all 11 members of Arizona's congressional delegation and submitted to the agencies late last week. The Hopi tribe has already filed several lawsuits in the French court system to stop the upcoming sales in at least five similar auctions that have already taken place in Paris. So far, the tribe has not emerged successful. Tribal Chairman Herman Honani says the items being sold hold religious significance and should not be bought or sold. He adds because of that, the tribe will not consider buying the objects as a method of repatriation.
Thereby, we would be putting a value on these kind of objects, and we just don't want to do that. We can't go there. And like it was mentioned, that once we start doing that, the value of these objects just goes up.
There are 13 items up for sale in auctions scheduled for June 1st and 10th. For National Native News, I'm Carrie Young.
Scientists in the Karuk tribe in Northern California are warning of a juvenile salmon fish kill because of drought conditions in the Pacific West Coast. Reporter Christina Onnested has more.
Lack of water and warming temperatures have made the Klamath River a breeding ground for Saramita shasta, a deadly bacteria that is threatening endangered salmon that live there.
Being in the Klamath River right now, it is a serious situation.
Jim Simonde with NIMS, the National Marine Fisheries Service, says 80 to 90% of the salmon they've tested are positive with the bacteria, meaning many of this year's run will die. Craig Tucker, the natural resources policy advocate for the Karuk tribe, says there just isn't enough water as California hits its fourth drought year in a row.
The water's just not there. We're in a year where the snowpack is something like 2% of historic average. We've just never seen a year like this. It's really a catastrophe.
And it's not even summer yet, when temperatures will get hotter and drier, creating a more hostile environment for endangered salmon. Meanwhile, state regulators are expected to release an estimated 5 million more juvenile salmon in the Klamath River any day now. Simone Day with NIMS says many of those fish could contract the disease and die too. Christina Onnested, National Native News, California.
The head of tourism for Wisconsin's 11 tribes is spearheading efforts to develop TV programming to promote tribal tourism. Danielle Kading reports.
Ernie Stevens is the executive director of Native American Tourism of Wisconsin. Stevens says they're filming video of the state's only tribal national park, tribal fisheries, festivals, and more. He says they're pulling together a pilot program that he hopes will put tribes on the map.
We can just capture the right essences of the 11 tribes of Wisconsin, get it out there to the mass audience, and get people to see. Not only is it education for them to know who we are and make them feel welcome to our reservations and want to visit, but also just be able to understand, you know, again, the differences among the tribes.
Steven says they're trying to raise about $25,000 by early August to jumpstart the project. He says they'd like to have the pilot show finished this fall and offer a series of programs by next spring. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading.
A group of U.S. senators has introduced a bill to help preserve endangered native languages. The Native Language Immersion Student Achievement Act establishes a grant program under the Department of Education. The bill seeks to limit overhead costs and reduce resource demands on tribes seeking funding for language programs. The Sundance Institute is hosting a Native Forum at Wayne State University in Detroit, Michigan next month. The New Frontier Native Forum is a space for Indigenous artists, youth, activists, and media makers to have conversations and participate in sessions focused on social and environmental justice. The event is scheduled for the third week in June. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Osterhout. Today is Thursday, May 28th, and it's 6 minutes past the hour. I'm very lucky in the studio to have with me the UAS incoming chancellor, Rick Caulfield. Thank you for joining me here
today.
Good
afternoon.
Yeah, so congratulations are in order.
Thank you very much.
Of course. And there's just a lot going on at UAS continuously. And this weekend being a really nice time to honor actually the outgoing chancellor.
Yes, actually we're having a community-wide celebration of John Pugh's service to the University of Alaska Southeast, and as a community member, of course, well known here in Juneau and throughout Southeast Alaska. So that's on Saturday at 4:30 in the afternoon at the Morant Building on the Juneau-Auk Lake campus of UAS. So we encourage anyone who would like to come out and honor John for his 30 years of service, really, in public service, 16 as chancellor at the University of Alaska Southeast. So please do come out and join us for that celebration.
Yes, it is a great time to honor a person who has made some very deep connections for the university in our community as well as the rest of Alaska.
We've seen a lot of change at UAS in recent years, and I've been privileged to be a part of that. I came here back in the late 70s, but had an opportunity to take the position as provost or sort of the chief academic officer at UAS just 5 years ago. I had served as a professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, actually earned my master's degree at UAF, and then went away and did doctoral study and then had the opportunity to come back and teach at UAF for a number of years. But when the opportunity opened up to take the position of provost here at Southeast, my wife and I had met here in Southeast Alaska, were married here, actually in Gustavus back in 1979, the Gustavus Inn, and always wanted to get back to Southeast. We have family here, and so we're very excited to be here and for me to be able to step into this role. And I will just say that I'm really honored and humbled by the opportunity. President Gamble had a recommendation from a national search process, and I'm very excited to step into this role, and there's some very big shoes to fill with John Pugh's departure.
With the University of Alaska Southeast, and, you know, I think of somebody with your qualifications and your amazing resume, and I think to myself, so what keeps somebody like you here in Southeast, and especially at UAS?
Well, Alaska is home. I came to Alaska, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, on the Ferry Columbia in 1975. I'd always wanted to come to Alaska, had an interest in natural resources management and political science, and in the aftermath of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, and with statehood not too much earlier than that, it was a terrific place and a great place for opportunity for young people. And so I knew as soon as I got to Southeast Alaska that this is where I was meant to be. As I mentioned, I spent a little bit of time here in Southeast at that time in the mid-70s, and then met my wife, and we were married, and we moved up to Fairbanks because she wanted to finish her degree there, and I was going to do some graduate work. And life got in the way. We had three children, had the opportunity to move out to Bristol Bay, and I taught for the university there. Actually, my first job with the university was as an instructor in the Bristol Bay campus in Dillingham.
Oh, okay.
And then went on to do doctoral work, and I had the opportunity to go to the United Kingdom and do a doctorate there that involved doing research in Greenland. And so that really set me on a course for doing Arctic research, teaching in that realm. But at one point along the way, I was asked if I would serve as a temporary dean to fill in at the community campus in Fairbanks, where I had lived for some time. And I found that I really enjoyed connecting with the community in which I was living, working with the businesses, the employers there. And I really enjoyed seeing non-traditional students, those who didn't necessarily come from a family that had a history of going to college, who were struggling. Most of them had jobs at the same time, had children. And with all of that in their lives, they worked hard to earn a college degree. And I just really admired and respect that. And that's really true here at UAS as well. Here in Alaska, the majority of our students across the entire university system are non-traditional students, meaning they're not between 18 and 24 years of age. We have that student population, but the majority are non-traditional. And so those are the students we serve. And one of our big challenges, one of our big opportunities, is to figure out how to provide quality, high-value education to students, whether they are between 18 and 24. And we would encourage them to look at our new freshman residence hall. We're very excited about the learning community that's taking place on the Auk Lake campus right now. A lot of really good, fun energy there. And yet also for students who are working in the community or even taking their courses online. About half of our credits at UAS are earned through online courses in our Master of Arts in Teaching program or our online Bachelor in Business Administration and things of that nature. So it's a very diverse group of students, but I'm very excited about higher education and its role in Alaska's future. So that's what keeps me here and gets me up every day.
In your new position as chancellor, where do you see the university going? You know, I imagine that there's a lot of visioning that you do, and I wonder where you see it going.
Well, there is a lot of visioning. Of course, we live in challenging budget times, so that's inevitable. But even with those challenging budgets, we're forward-looking. And when you look at the dramatic transformation that's taken place at UAS over, say, the last 20 years, and then you look at the positive feedback that we get from our graduates, 90% of our graduates tell us that they are satisfied or very satisfied with the quality of the education that they have. And the number one thing they talk about is the quality of our faculty and our staff. And so that provides a terrific foundation from which we can keep moving forward. And so my hope is, even as we deal with difficult budget circumstances, that we continue to focus on a really student-centered experience, a learning experience at UAS. And not to say anything negative about larger institutions, but sometimes students can go away, whether in-state or out-of-state. They're anxious to maybe leave their home community and see what the world looks like elsewhere, and that's not a bad thing. But there's a lot to be said for going to a university where everyone knows your name and you have terrific opportunities to work with very talented faculty in a way that you might not be able to do, say, until you were a graduate student in some other place. And there's a lot of attention given to what we call high-impact learning experiences, so internship opportunities to work. We have a number of students, for example, who work in internships and practicums. There's an accounting student who works at the Alaska Permanent Fund, for example. We have a diesel technology student who's working with Holland America and in that kind of a setting. We have biology students who are working with NOAA on the fish weir on Auk Creek. We have students working up at the American Bald Eagle Foundation in Haines, working with the birds there and the visitors who come to that center. We have students in Ketchikan and in Sitka, our two other campuses, who are in Ketchikan, for example, working with Vigor Alaska, the shipbuilding operation there. We created a new maritime and multi-skilled worker program to help people prepare to be able to step into positions working with the shipyard, which is very exciting. And in Sitka, we have the fisheries technology program, so people who want to get a foot in the door working with hatcheries or working with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game have an opportunity to gain some practical skills as well as academic knowledge. So that combination of being in a small university where you have an opportunity to be in these high-impact practicum and internship opportunities combined with really talented faculty and hopefully really good customer service for our students. To me, that is a really exciting and a terrific opportunity in the coming years.
I love that you use the words customer service, because they are actually, people are paying to go to this institution.
Are.
And I think that's a very important point that not everybody is thinking about. So.
Yeah, and higher education is getting all the more expensive, but we're still, I would say, high value. The cost of tuition and housing, if you were to live in our freshman housing, for example, or family housing on the Auk Lake campus, is still quite reasonable compared to similar institutions elsewhere. I have family members and friends who've gone out to college elsewhere, and they pay often twice what you'll pay for an education here and come back with significant student debt. And so many of our students are able to get some forms of scholarship or other types of support, and that combined with a reasonable price for tuition makes it very affordable. And in the long run, all the studies show that higher education continues to be a path towards a more productive future for you and your family.
Yes. I have one other question, and you can just laugh off this one if you want to. But for somebody who maybe hasn't grown up in a university environment or hasn't gone through the university system, could you give us a layman's term of what a chancellor does and is?
Sure.
Break it down for us.
Well, I start actually on Monday, so I will have firsthand opportunity to explore myself.
Yeah.
But the chancellor has responsibility for all aspects of the university's operation. As provost, my focus has been predominantly in the academic realm, so working with our deans in Juneau, Sitka, Ketchikan, our campus directors there, and our faculty. The chancellor has responsibilities for that in a broad sense, but also for our facilities, for our building and our infrastructure, for working with the Board of Regents on new proposals that affect tuition or the future of the university system as a whole. Something I'm very interested in is development. I'd love to start a relationship with people who would like to invest in the University of Alaska Southeast in the long term, maybe to think about planned giving and including that in an estate down the line, so that they think about a legacy and they think about enduring opportunities for young people in Southeast Alaska at the University of Alaska Southeast. So that's the breadth of the operation that a chancellor is involved with. Very exciting.
It is. It is very exciting. And if you'd like to, if our listening audience would like to give a warm farewell to our outgoing chancellor at the University of Alaska Southeast, that's John Pugh. You can do that this Saturday at 4:30 to 7:30, and that's on the UAS campus in the Morant building. And also it's a good time to meet the incoming chancellor, Rick Caulfield. And thank you so much for your time today.
And it's my pleasure. And the one other thing I would say is if anyone in the listening area is thinking about enrolling in the University of Alaska Southeast, I'd encourage you to give us a call. Go to the website, www.uas.alaska.edu, and check out the opportunities. I think you'd be excited by what's there, and we'd love to talk to you.
Thank you so much, and all the best to you in your new position.
Thank you so much.
I'm not afraid to
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. Today's Thursday, May 28th. My name is Shona Osterhout. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Karen Fortwängler is here in the studio with us to highlight Kids Safe Day at the Eagles Lodge. Welcome to the studio.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So Kids Safe Day is this Saturday?
This Saturday, yeah, over at the Eagles. And it's from 11 to 2. We have different people from the community coming over. This is open to the public and it's free. Coming over to the Eagles to speak about kids, about different safety stuff. Like we've got the fire department coming. We've got the Alaska Sea Dogs coming. We have state troopers coming. And we've got the swimming pool people coming as well. So, and then I think there will be a few more coming out that we're still working on getting there. But it's basically where kids from all ages, you know, early kids, earlier years and early teen maybe, you know, the older teens probably won't get much from it, though I hope that they come, you know, and that they attempt to get some information. Sea Dogs will be doing a couple of demonstrations and stuff, so that'll be great. But they come and they get information about how to continue to stay safe in our community. They get information about different stuff. I'm hoping the Coast Guard Auxiliary will be there again talking about boat safety. We try and get a variety amount of people there to talk about different safety tips to kids, you know, so that we can continue to keep our kids safe in this community. We also are going to be serving the kids hot dogs and chips and drinks, and then we'll also have a giveaway, door prizes there for the kids that anybody comes to visit. We'll have a chance to enter to win a door prize. And then the people from the community will also have some giveaways.
Where is the Eagles Lodge located?
It is a kitty corner from the Nugget Mall, but behind the Nugget Mall. So if you take Jordan Avenue right there where that stoplight is, where all the banks are on the corner there, you go down, you take a left down there, and you'll see us. We're on the right. And I'm also going to have balloons outside marking the driveway. So that will help. And then on the front of the building, above the door, you'll see the letters FOE, and that's how they know they're in the right spot.
How did the Kids Safe Day come about?
This is actually put out by the Grand Aries for all the areas. They send information out to each of the Aries. And this is actually a nationwide thing amongst the Eagles Lodge. They send us out a form. We're competing about different ideas that we've done and stuff. And we get recognition. Last year, the Juno's Eagle in the state received second place for everything that we did for this day. So this is our third annual one, and so we're really super looking forward to it again. This is the second year. I've done it 3 years, so this is my third year of doing it.
And so the idea is that we just want to get all the kids to the place so they can learn about boat safety. They can learn about, will there be hiking safety? And you said,
yeah, the Sea Dogs will be there talking about hiking safety and stuff. And, you know, if your kids should get in trouble, you know, it might be nice to come out and, you know, get information if you don't know exactly, you know, what to tell the kids, or maybe just having someone reiterate the, you know, safety stuff for kids, you know, to say, hey, you know, getting safety tips from, you know, officials in our community, you know, would help back up what parents are telling their kids.
And this is a free event for kids.
Right. It is totally free.
That's great. It's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. this Saturday at the Eagles Lodge. You can check that out. And is there a website or a place where people can get more information?
They can call myself. The only thing on the Eagles website is the information for this, and that's Juno Douglas, Eagles 4200 is their Facebook page. My contact information is Karen, and you can call my cell at 957-6632.
Great. Karen, thank you so much, and all the best with Kids Safe Day.
Thank you for having me.
Support for this station comes from Alaska Canopy Tours, offering canopy and zipline tours. More information at alaskacanopy.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 28th of May, 2015. It was on this day in 1937, President Franklin D. Roosevelt, flipping a switch at the White House, officially opened the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. There was a big celebration. It went on for about a week, and there was a poem written for the occasion by the engineer who designed the bridge, Joseph Strauss. It went, "At last the mighty task is done, resplendent in the western sun. The bridge looms mountain high, its titan piers grip ocean floor, its great steel arms link shore with shore, its towers pierce the sky." It was on this day in 1830, President Andrew Jackson signed the Indian Removal Act into law, which went against previous official U.S. policy respecting Native Americans' legal and political rights. President Jackson declared his great friendly feelings for the Indians and then signed the law which forced them to leave their homes in the southeastern United States, primarily the Cherokee, Choctaw, Creek, Chickasaw, and Seminole nations. About 100,000 Indians forcibly marched thousands of miles to lands west of the Mississippi. As many as a fourth of them died en route. It's the birthday of Mae Swenson, born Logan, Utah, 1913. Swedish parents, immigrants who came to this country as converts to the Mormon faith. She was the oldest of 10 children. She became the black sheep of the family when she questioned the Mormon faith at the age of 13. Started keeping a diary, composing poems. Writing was the one place she felt free to express herself. She said, "I'm two eyes looking out of a suit of armor. I write because I can't talk." She was in her 20s when she moved to New York City, had a number of low-paying jobs. At one point, she shoplifted a dress so she'd look respectable when she went to the welfare office to ask for help. Her reputation and success grew slowly. Her first book came out when she was 41 years old. Another Animal was the title. She got a two-month residency at Yaddo, where she met the poet Elizabeth Bishop. They became friends, possibly lovers. And though Bishop lived in Brazil, they exchanged letters, 260 of them, over the next 29 years. Mae Swenson wrote to Bishop, "Not to need illusion, to dare to see and say how things really are, is the emancipation I would like to attain." Her collections include the complete love poems of Mae Swenson and a book entitled Dear Elizabeth, 5 Poems and 3 Letters to Elizabeth Bishop. Here's a poem by Wendy Cope entitled Postcards. "At first I sent you a postcard from every city I went to, Grüße aus Bad, aus Birmingham, aus Rotterdam, aus Tel Aviv, mit Liebe. Cards from you arrived in English with many commas. Hope you're fine and still alive, says one from Hong Kong. By that time we weren't writing quite as often. Now we're nearly 9 years away from the lake and the blue mountains and the room with the balcony, but the heat and light of those days can reach this far from time to time. Your latest was from Senegal, mine from Helsinki. I don't know if we'll meet again. Be happy. If you hear this, send a postcard." Postcards, a poem by Wendy Cope from If I Don't Know, published by Faber and Faber, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Osterhout, and today is Thursday, May 20th, 28th. It's 30 minutes past the hour. In the studio with me, I have Tish Satry, here to talk about Cancer Connections Celebration of Life this Saturday. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, and so I was, for people who don't know what Cancer Connection is, I actually first heard about Cancer Connection here on Juno Afternoon, and
did
some research on you know, this amazing organization, and I'm hoping that you can give people some background.
Thank you. We started in 1996. Our founder, Mike Miller, was diagnosed with a kind of a rare and early cancer in his life, and found very little support available here locally. And so he started with a support group and then realized we really had issues with travel assistance and started to bring people together that had a vision of how we could support our community members that are going through cancer and how you can also help their family members. So Cancer Connection actually started as a Southeast Alaska Cancer and Wellness Foundation. And then people sort of thought we were giving away money rather than trying to request money, because that foundation sort of thing. And we changed our name back about 10 years ago, and all of a sudden everybody knows who we are. So we're coming up on our 20th year next year, and it's a grassroots organization providing emotional and financial support for folks that are dealing with cancer and having to deal with sometimes traveling. We serve all of Southeast Alaska, so people that are coming to Juneau for treatment or people that might be going outside for treatment. We're there to help, and we have a great group of volunteers that are willing to talk and help you walk your journey. We've got a apartment rental in Seattle for people that are seeking treatment down there. We have travel grants for folks that have to go somewhere, and we have a support group that meets on a monthly basis.
It's just a really amazing service, actually. And I'm wondering, Tish, how did you get involved in Cancer Connection?
You know, I was diagnosed in 1997, and I had a really bad summer. I was the trifecta of bladder, kidney, and cervical cancer. I was just like, I think I joined the Cancer of the Month Club, and I really wanted off the subscription list. And at that point, I was traveling a lot down, and I was a single parent, and I was having to leave my daughter behind, and it was just a really emotionally tough time and physically tough on recovery from surgeries and that. And Mike Miller reached out and said, you know, come to the support group. We can help. He connected me with some resources in Seattle. And at that point, survivors here locally had written up a book of all the things you should know if you're an Alaskan down in Seattle and need to know who does this, who does that. American Cancer Society will give you 4 days here, whatever. You know, it was just a fabulous resource. And hence, we started to come together and figured out, after you've kind of gone through that impact, even if it's a reoccurring thing in your life, you start to want to get back to other people and help and share. And this community has been a phenomenal, phenomenal community, helping us so much with helping survivors. And it's a tough time, and I love the fact that we're able to have a celebration of life, because there are, you know, 13 million survivors in the world now. In the U.S., and we're a growing population, and we have needs and things, but we've always got to celebrate life each and every day.
Yeah, and so how have you seen the, because 20 years since this began, mm-hmm. and I'm just wondering how you've seen resources and the way our medical community and the way our community as a whole helps, and how has it transitioned over the years?
You know, it really has. And being a frequent flyer in the medical community, as I would say, the idea that the hospital expansions, the types of doctors they're attracting to the community, the fact that we now have oncology, radiation, I mean, none of that in 97 was available for me. I pretty well had to go outside, and I had incredibly wonderful medical care at family practice. And in fact, one of the awardees is my personal doctor, Dr. Eric Olson, is getting our cancer medical professional of the year for Cancer Connection. And I just felt like this community cared a lot. And if they needed to partner and team with somebody else in oncology or something like that, they figured out how to do it. And it's a whole different place right now, and I'm very excited for the future.
That's a great segue to the celebration of life. Like you said, there are so many survivors and celebrating every single day. And this schedule of events is great. The event is on Saturday.
It is.
And I was hoping you could say, you know, you've got speakers, you've got awards. It's just a great way to celebrate Cancer Connection as well as life.
Thank you. We have done kind of a luncheon and a walk in the past years, and this year we're trying something different, and we have our four awardees that we're honoring, but it's for survivors and for the entire community. It's a way to see how these folks have impacted our community. There are four awardees, Cheryl Weinberg, Ruth Johnson, Dr. Eric Olson, and then Coastal Helicopters is our corporate partner. And it's a chance to hear their story and how and our story of how they've impacted Cancer Connection. And then we've also got Mike Miller, our founder, is coming up from Oregon. And I know there's a whole lot of GSC folks and folks that have swam for him over the years or parents that will probably come by just to say hi to him and say, you're a miracle. You've survived your cancer 20 years. He had a very rare cancer, never expected to make it more than a year.
Wow.
But he's really beat the odds. So
that's amazing. And you said that recently Cancer Connection held an event that kind of cleaned out everybody's
Declutter for a Cause. And, oh, this community is so generous. We have a Herb Bonnet original. We've got some Marie Munoz prints. We've got Nancy Taylor Stonington. We've got John Ferringer. Then we've got beautiful fabric art and a mink coat and a 100-year-old vacuum sweeper and antiques and jewelry. And I'm so excited about this. We have 100 items in the silent auction, and I hope people just come down. I know they have to duck out of the sun for just a little bit. The silent auction will be running from 4:30 to 6:30, and we wrap things up at 6:30 at the Jack. And it's a non-ticketed event. If people want to make a donation at the door to Cancer Connection, that's great, but we'd love people to stop by and take a look at the auction items.
As far as the program goes, you'll be the MC for the evening?
I am, and we'll have our program starting at 5 and get a chance to listen to our founder and also the awardees. But mostly we're there to celebrate and talk to each other and hear each other's stories. And I think it's a chance I'm hoping a bunch of people will come through and bid, and we'll have live music by Rob Cohen, and V Cellar Door is doing some catering for us, and there'll be a no-host bar. And if people can just stop by the Jack for that couple hours, we'd love to have the support.
And, you know, it's also a great way, too, is that, you know, I've often going through living with people who have cancer and going through the process that it is that cancer affects everyone. And it's a great time to come and be with other people who maybe having a similar experience as you are, as well as learn what the Cancer Connection does.
Exactly. And I listened to a very touching piece you had on the radio the other day with the boy that rang the bell,
mm-hmm.
you know, signifying that end of treatment. And you're going to find people at this event that are coming to help give back because we provided them the apartment or whatever. But you're also getting a group of survivors and their family members and their friends that say, we're so glad you're still with us. You know, it's a community. This is one of the most supportive communities I've ever seen in regards to cancer survivorship. And all of Southeast have come in, and Coastal Helicopters, who we're recognizing as our corporate sponsor of the year, since 1998, when Alaska Airlines stopped doing the upgrade program, which for those people that remember that, they came in and said, we're going to help. And they annually do a fundraiser for us where they donate the fuel, the pilots, the helicopters, and they do that spring. This year it was May 9th. And they took people up. It sells out every year. The community supports it, and they'll bring the check to this event. And it's the Wilsons have been just an enormous support of our organization over the years.
If people would like more information about this event, or as well as the myriad of services that Cancer Connection that helps with in this community, where can they check it out?
You know, I'd suggest the website for sure. It's www.cancerconnectionak.com. www.canopyeventsnetwork.org, or they could call us at 796-2273. And we have volunteers that are carrying the phone, and we'll try to help direct them any way, you know, if they want to talk to somebody about it or just want to learn about the travel program, we're more than glad to answer any questions.
Tish Satre, thank you so much for coming on air to talk with us about Saturday's Celebration of Life, as the Cancer Connection honors quite a few award honorees, Coastal Helicopters, Cheryl Weinberg, Dr. Eric Olson, Ruth Johnson, and a great way to share stories in this community. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks for having us.
This is Bird Note. For 3 minutes while soaring to 100 feet in the air. The skylark. No other bird in North America has such a long song or sings so persistently in flight. Around 1902, skylarks were brought from England to Vancouver Island, British Columbia, to satisfy the desire of English immigrants to hear the birds' exalted song. This remains the only place in North America, except for a few sightings in Alaska, where the skylark can be heard. Never mind. They do what so many birds do. They carry our aspirations and send our spirits soaring.
But my heart is riding on your wings.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Osterhout. Today is Thursday, May 28th, and it is 44 minutes past the hour. And in honor of the Juno School District being done tomorrow, I thought I would give you just a little taste of this.
When we got
And that's right. School is out. Tomorrow is the last day of school for the Juneau School District. Would like to say congratulations to all the graduates who graduated this past Sunday and all those other folks who are moving up a grade this coming school year. Have a happy summer. And I'd like to welcome to the studio, it's not the one and only Ms. Nancy DeTourney this week, but we have a new one and only, and I'm very happy to welcome Hillary Hinnon to the studio, the new executive assistant over at the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council. And I hope that when you step into the Jack, you welcome Hillary into her new position. And hi, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks. I'm happy to be here.
So you've got all the news that's fit to print about what's going on around our community, and I'm hoping that you can maybe let's just start with, say, tonight.
Sure. Tonight, well, we have family time at the Mendenhall Valley Library. That's at 5:30 to 7:30. Also tonight at 6:30 p.m. to 9 p.m., there's a grids and patterns class at the Canvas, which sounds really interesting.
What does that mean? I have no idea.
I don't either, but it sounds really enticing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great stuff at the Canvas, so it's always worth checking out. At 5:30 to 6:30, Beyond Baby Blues Mom Support Group at the Juneau Birth Center. Always good. And then I guess there's open mic tonight at the Alaskan as well as tomorrow night.
Oh, tomorrow night.
That's what I saw on the calendar.
Interesting, because I heard a string band was playing there tomorrow night.
Oh.
So who knows? Maybe the string band is going to also...
Maybe we'll just have to go check it
out. Do some open mic. Great.
Yep. So I think that's about it for tonight. Tomorrow night, Dan Hobson will be playing classical guitar at the Gold Room, 7 to 9 p.m., Sigla will be having a Friday social at the Imperial Saloon, 21 and over.
And this is actually really cool because Sigla is getting ready for a huge, huge week-long, actually I think it's 10 days. Sigla is outdoing themselves this year for Pride Week. So I think tomorrow is a great time if you're a person who wants to volunteer and get more information about the upcoming Pride Week. It's a great time to do that at the social.
Yep, definitely. Saturday, big day, you just heard about the Celebration of Life, so
mm-hmm.
that's going on at the Jack, 4:30 to 7, I believe. In the morning, there's a Sea Coast Relay being put on by the Southeast Roadrunners. That should be really interesting. Not sure if it's too late to register. Worth checking out. From noon to 2, Sigla is also putting on a youth social at the Heritage Glacier Cafe. From 2 to 4 p.m., Bridge Builders of Juneau are having a meeting at the Hub. At 7 p.m., Juneau Dance Theater is having their spring recital, which is really exciting. I used to dance with them, so that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And also at 7 to 9 p.m., Dan Hobson will also be playing at the Gold Room again.
And there's so many things that you can do tomorrow. You can go out and check out, say goodbye to his position, not goodbye from Juneau, but Chancellor John Pugh will be taking off from the university. And you could do that also on Saturday night. You could hop on down to the Jack, to the Cancer Connection. There's just a variety of things always going on here.
Yep. On Sunday, we're going to be having another event at the Jack. It's called Comedy for a Cause. It's being put on by NAMI. That's at 3:30 p.m. It goes to 6 p.m. It should be a hoot. At 11 a.m., there's a weekly ukulele jam at T.K. McGuire's.
Have you ever been to that?
I haven't. Is it awesome?
So cool. Yes, it is so cool. There's just everybody drinking coffee and sometimes mimosas and playing the ukulele. It's really cool.
Sounds like a great Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Let's see. At noon on Sunday, the Orca program is putting on their annual whale watch. And at 2 p.m., the Juneau Dance Theater is having another recital.
Where is that? Is that at
Thunder Mountain? That is at Thunder Mountain, yep. And you can pay at the door or get tickets, but I think you could probably just pay at the door. And at 6 p.m., there's going to be an international folk dance at the Alaska Club downtown, and that's free. Let's see, on to Monday, first week without school. So there's going to be a bunch of art camps going on and art classes for kids, stuff like that. So there's a bunch of classes going on at the Canvas. There's a youth glass-on-glass mosaics class, a youth wheel-throwing class, and a youth introduction to oil painting class. All sounds very interesting, so contact the Canvas about that. At 12:05 p.m. on Monday, There's a Taku Toastmasters Club meeting at the Federal Building. And at 6 p.m. on Monday, there's a Tlingit Language Learning Group at the Downtown Public Library. There's also a landscape drawing class at the Canvas at 6:30 p.m. I think that's more geared towards adults.
What about Tuesday? What's going on?
On Tuesday, the Fine Arts Camp actually starts up. I don't know why not on Monday, but on Tuesday. So you can contact Juno Dance about that. If you haven't signed up already, that should be fun for the kids. There's also an art camp going on through the Louise Miller Fine Arts Studio. So if one, not the other, right? NAMI is having a basics course at 5:30 p.m. at the Juno Family Health and Birth Center. And at 6:15 a.m., there's a Toastmasters Club. Let's see, on to Wednesday at 10 a.m., Write for Your Life at Mendenhall Valley Library. At noon, there's a Capital Toastmasters of Juno weekly meeting. At 6 p.m., A Window Between Worlds, Women Arts Support Group. There's an event happening at the Filipino Community Hall. And at 7 p.m. at Thunder Mountain High School, the Juno Symphony Youth Solo Competition is happening, and that's free and open to the public.
Have you ever been to one of those?
I haven't.
It's incredible.
I bet.
I mean, we're talking like these kids blow my mind.
Uh-huh.
They play, and I'm just like, you're kidding me. How old are you? I mean, and they continue to play. You know, some of these people are going to college, and then they're getting out of college, and they're coming back to play in our symphony, and it's just a really great way to see all the amazing work that that young musicians do in this town.
It's really, pretty incredible.
It is.
Yep.
It's a great event. What was the event you said at the Filipino Community Hall?
I cannot pronounce it.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Does it say, is it a dance? Is it a, it doesn't say.
Doesn't say.
Okay, well, you'll have to call them.
Yes.
Perfect.
And last but not least, there is an old-time jam at the Alaskan at 7:30 p.m.
That's on Wednesday.
On Wednesday.
Great.
Yep.
And do you have anything on there for the following Thursday?
Story time at Douglas Library, all ages, 11 a.m. Probably another open mic night in the evening.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. And I know it's a week early, but first Friday, not this Friday, but next Friday, will be happening. But this Friday, there is actually an opening reception at the Silver Bow Backroom. It's by McGill Pratt, and it's called A Show of Forks, Oil Paintings.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's going to be all forks.
I know.
I hope it is.
I really hope it is.
I'm going to go check it out.
And that's at 4:30 to 7:30 tomorrow.
One of my favorite artists in town, total disclaimer, is M.K. McNaughton.
Mm-hmm.
She's just wonderful to me. And she did a whole series of braids. She did a whole series of chairs.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, what? There's forks? Surprised it's not her. But I'm excited to go see the forks oil exhibits, oil paintings.
I just heard my friend Terry Robis just told me about a series she did of oil paintings, things she found in her fridge.
That sometimes could be scary.
It sounds amazing.
So, Hillary, how are you liking working over there at the Jack?
I love it.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. There's always something going on. Definitely never bored. I get to talk about art all the time.
So you've got your finger on the pulse.
I think so.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's great. And if people want more information about the calendar events, where can
mm-hmm.
they get that?
You can give us a call at 586-2787, or you could visit our website at jahc.org, J-A-H-C.org, and all our information is on there on a calendar.
And you know what's really cool is because we have a great partnership here at KTOO with the Jack, you can also find that community calendar on our website at ktoo.org. Hillary Hinnon, thank you so much for being here to talk about all the arts news with Arts Up.
Thanks so much.
Bless my heart.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. Today is Thursday, May 28th. My name is Shona Osterhout, and it's 56 minutes past the hour. And in the studio with me, I have Annie Bartholomew, and I wanted to welcome Annie back to KXLL and KTOO. So thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Shona.
Yeah, so we just have, you know, a minute or two, and I wanted to just say, hey, welcome back, and what are you doing here?
Oh, man. So I'm back here as an arts, music, and culture producer, and one of my main roles is being at KXLL, helping with the mix, coordinating events, working with that station. Right now we're looking for DJs. I really enjoyed the Alabama Shakes you just played.
I love Music Alabama.
Have you heard their
Shakes
new album?
I have. In fact, you play a lot of cuts off that album, which I really appreciate.
I'm into it. I love her.
I do too. Her voice is like a little butter.
Ooh.
Yeah. So recruiting DJs for KXLL, so what do you have to do? And like, what kind of knowledge do you have? And I will preface this with, I walked into KTOO probably like 10 years ago and said, Jeff, I kind of like the radio. And he really helped me out.
Yeah, so if you want to do KXLL, one of the things is you probably should already be a listener of the station because we do have a sound. It's kind of quirky and weird and all over the place, but there's a definite sound that goes to it. And if you're interested in kind of emulating that and adding to it, you can send me a two-hour playlist, annie@ktoo.org. Spotify works really well. YouTube links work. But, yeah, that's what we're looking for, people who – already know we're cool, already know they're cool, and really want to contribute.
And it's actually the mix. I mean, definitely listen to the station if you haven't already, but the mix is all over the map, and it's old and new and kind of in the middle. Like, it's just all over.
Yeah, today on my morning show, I kept getting more requests for, like, 60 soul and girl groups, and I wanted to play contemporary music, and I mixed some new soul artists in there. But I was just, you know, I couldn't believe that's what everybody wanted to hear this morning. Which is really cool. How many towns get to do that? You can be a rock station one morning and a soul station the other. And
Yeah. It's cool. Well, Annie, thank you so much for coming on air to talk about that, and all the best in your new position.
Thanks for having me, Shona.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on Translators K276AF in the Mendenhall.